Kev?
Julian?
We decided on a name for the podcast.
We did, yeah. That's it. That's this whole episode. We'll announce the name and tune in next week.
Yep. Congratulations. It's like a gender reveal party, right? Everyone gets together and you're like, looks like it's a girl. That's cool. Anyway, we have our new flagship offering from the Hexdrinkers Presents, the House of Commons.
Hey.
Do you see what we did there? Kind of clever, isn't it, right? Your one-stop shop for all things competitive and at the common rarity, and also technically at the uncommon rarity.
Sometimes. One out of every 100 cards we discuss is of the uncommon rarity.
Right, an insignificant percentage, not relevant whatsoever.
1%, not relevant.
Occupy the 1% or whatever. Off to a great start. Thanks, Chev.
House of Commons.
Thanks, I appreciate it. You know the drill. We're going to talk about deck of the week. We got some new database submissions that we're going to go over as well. But before all of that, I want to shout out that I am a part of a very exciting PDC, ooh, that's Pauper Dual Commander, tournament slash league thing. Just got set up. I want to shout out the PDH Homebase, an excellent resource for all things PDH, but specifically their Discord server is running a league. So every week you'll be paired up against one of the members of the league. I believe we have 10 or 12 people in the league. And you'll do a best of three in PDC during that week, and then we'll record the results, and at the end the winner will get a prize or something. So shout out to the people organizing the tournament over there. That's the Nun and I believe Naptown Hustle are the two who are coordinating all of that.
Will this be the official unveiling of Gelectrode to the larger audience?
Yes sir, somebody's about to feel the pain. I can tell you that much. I'm actually, so my first matchup I know is against Loyal Apprentice.
That's one of the best aggros. Yeah.
And that's a very good deck, and I was looking at it, and we are trying to do very similar things in terms of like a lot of burn, really. And yeah, the person I'm playing against in the chat, once pairings came out, said, I don't think I will ever make a single Thopter because I don't think Loyal Apprentice will ever live. And I was like, yep. Loyal Apprentice is a 2-1. So
yeah, Gelectrode set up for success on that. I'm excited to hear how it goes next week.
Yes, every week I will update you guys on what has been going on with that list. And Chev will play the part of the impartial, in quotes,
exactly,
observer. I'm very excited, but let's get to our deck of the week. I have brought the deck this week, and this is one that I've been excited to talk about for a bit, and actually I've got to do a little bit of playtesting with. This is the Pure Sight Marrow. This is a deck from before the official submission periods began, and now, of course, we're on a rolling basis, but it's still regularly maintained. This was updated just last week with some new Dominaria United cards, which I'll highlight in a bit, but first, let's talk about Pure Sight Marrow, right? Pure Sight Marrow is 2 mana, each of those being an Azorius hybrid. It's a Merfolk Wizard, a 2/2. And then you can pay an Azorius hybrid and untap it to look at the top card of your library, and you may remove that card from the game. Now, there's a lot of interesting and tricky things that we can do with this, but first off, I want to just talk about the ability on Pure Sight Marrow, because there's some intricacies to it that are detrimental and also... what's the opposite of detrimental?
Detrimental, yeah.
Detrimental, yeah. So you can't use this if you're summoning sick. It has to be tapped to activate the ability. So you can't just activate the ability willy-nilly. And also, the untap specifically is part of the cost, not part of the resolution of the ability. So if someone has one of those, you know, there's like in limited, there's always a thing that's like a white spell that's like destroy target tapped creature. If you activate the ability, it will already be untapped by the time if someone wanted to respond and try and kill it.
Oh, gotcha.
Similar to things that say sacrifice a creature for cost or discard a card for cost, people can't respond to you doing those things and potentially interrupt the play. So those are the intricacies of Pure Sight Marrow as a card, but how are we actually going to win with this? We are an Azorius deck, so we're not really doing combat stuff. We are a combo deck, right? We have a few different options to finish off. We're going to be generating infinite mana, as you are wont to do. And then with Pure Sight Marrow's ability, we technically have like infinite scry, right? We can remove the top card of our library from the game, so we can go and find our necessary pieces to actually win the game. But how are we going to get infinite mana? I feel like this is something that's almost fallen out of favor a little bit, but the good old-fashioned Retraction Helix / Banishing Knack infinite combo. So
yeah,
if you have one of those two cards plus one of the monsters that comes in and... monsters, Jesus Christ, Yu-Gi-Oh! Creatures that comes in and untaps multiple lands, Cloud of Fairies or Peregrine Drake, plus High Tide, or if you have Sunscape Familiar, which reduces the cost of all your blue and green spells by one, and Azorius Chancery, which is the taps for multiple mana, Or if we're really hard off for stuff, we can do Drake plus High Tide plus Familiar plus Capsize. And that essentially locks our opponents out of the game, even though we don't win the game, but that locks us out of the game. But assuming that we can establish the Helix or Knack combo and get infinite mana, we can then infinitely scry down to something like a Viridian Longbow or a Hermetic Study or a Psionic Gift. And since now we have infinite mana, we can untap and retap Pure Sight Marrow infinite times to deal infinite damage one by one.
Wow. Yeah, I honestly don't think I've seen a combo deck in a while, at least from the meta and how it's developing in Tryhard's land. It is a little bit more aggro. So having the time to kind of get the pieces required for our classic blue infinite mana combo is kind of more pressure than it used to be. So I think something where the commander itself has an ability that really helps dig through the deck is super important in a deck like this. And it does bring up the question, you know, if your commander isn't pushing the game plan along in this particular way, how good is your blue deck at getting this combo in a more aggro environment? So I think Pure Sight Marrow really, really does a good job there. This really just feels like a return to form from some of when I know we started looking at CPDH, you know, what to kind of expect in a deck. Every cantrip and counter you can expect in blue, plus, you know, what you need to get the combo going, kind of reads like a very easy, you know, welcome to the format, here's how to make a combo deck. And a truly, like, prolific primer, too. So big thanks to Yeleron for that one. It outlines all the combos, the engines, advice to play, what cards they're not running and why, alternate choices based on meta. It is a living document, as Papa Popper would say, in terms of, you know, actually describing what this deck is and how to play it efficiently.
Yeah, well, like I was saying, you can tell that this deck, it's got a special place in Yeleron's heart because it's constantly updated. It's constantly tweaked out just to get it always to 100%. But yeah, like you were saying, this is a through and through combo deck. We are running 7 creatures, one of which is our commander, so that's of course required. We have Cloud of Fairies plus Peregrine Drake, which are required for the combo. Sunscape Familiar is also required for the combo. We have Heliod's Pilgrim, which can get us either Psionic Gift or Hermetic Study. If our viewers don't know what those are, they're just both 2-mana blue enchantments for 1 and a blue that says an enchanted creature has tap, deal 1 damage to any target. So that is how we're actually going to deal lethal to our opponents. This is back when the color pie was not strictly adhered to.
It was a guideline.
We have a Trinket Mage, which is nice because that will get us our Viridian Longbow, which is our third piece that can deal the damage. And then the final creature is actually a card that we talked about last week, Academy Wall. Let's go.
Hey, Academy Wall.
You know, this deck has 49 sorceries and 31 instants. 40 instants and sorceries in here. So once again, the ability for this thing to just sit and block and generate value, especially since we're a combo deck, we don't care that this is eluding because we literally just need like 4 cards and then we're good.
Yep.
We're already going to be, you know, exiling things off the top with Pure Sight Marrow. So very condensed creature package, but just enough redundancy that it doesn't feel super fragile. But we have all the classic staples. Ton of protection for Marrow, Benevolent Blessing, Stave Off,
yep.
Dive Down, Intervene, Dispersal Shield, and another card that we talked about, Shore Up.
Hey, Shore Up. We're happy to see it. Shore Up also untaps, correct?
Yes, exactly. It also untaps, which is insane. Speaking of tapping and untapping, we have a couple ways to make sure that we can get our Marrow tapped without having to actually enter combat. Namely, I'm seeing Springleaf Drum in here is a pretty solid inclusion, especially since we do have so many singular mana cards. And UC A Guard Approach is a card that I think goes under a lot of people's radar, but it's one of those like modal cards from Adventures of the Forgotten Realms. Just a single blue mana, instant, choose one, tap target creature. So we can obviously tap down a big beater that's coming at us, or tap down our Pure Sight Marrow if we need that ability, or target creature you control gains hexproof until end of turn.
There's also, I didn't hear you mention it, but similar to Springleaf Drum, we have Moonsnare Prototype from the new Kamigawa set. One blue artifact, tap an untapped artifact or creature, add a colorless, but it also has the channel ability to bounce a permanent to the top or bottom of a library.
That channel is huge if you like really need to.
Now, of course, the Springleaf Drum I would put, you know, slightly above, because then we get the one mana of any color we can use to immediately activate Pure Sight Marrow to tap, you know, untap, and we don't get that same sort of loop with Moonsnare Prototype, but I think the channel ability more than makes up for it.
Just a few more things that I wanted to mention. Lantern of Revealing looks like it's just going to be a new staple. 3-mana artifact, taps for any mana of a color, 4-mana tap it. Look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, put it on the battlefield tapped. If you don't put the card onto the battlefield, you may put it on the bottom of your library. It's free ramp. We've seen Bonner's Ornament. The 3-mana mana rock with slightly overcosted ability has just become a staple in the format. So cool to see that.
I feel like Lantern of Revealing and Bonder's Ornament will kind of ebb and flow as the format just continues to exist. Bonder's Ornament will get to a high enough level where it's not worth it to run it because too many other people have it, so people start running Lantern, then it switches back, because of course, like, Bonder's Ornament is, you know, just draw a card, whereas this is more, it's a lot of words to say, like, sure, a land gets to go on the battlefield, but the other one you don't get to draw, you can put it on the bottom or keep it on the top, so benefit from the land, but I feel like on the whole, I would rather draw. So I think it'll be interesting to see where those two fall.
I mean, this deck is running both, so yeah, we don't have to pick here. But was that Commander Legends Baldur's Gate? Is that what that set symbol is?
Baldur's Gate was the rise of the 3-mana rock again, where we also got the common Thought Vessel, the one that taps for anything but hand of any size.
It looks like a fish.
Yeah, yeah.
The art is like it's like a fish. Okay,
yeah. The walrus from that one too. ETB Scry 2. 2/2 taps for any color.
Yes, yeah. I believe so. 3-mana mana rocks are coming back in a big way. I kind of love to see it. And then I think the last thing I want to talk about is just the mana base. Speaking of mana, the mana base is just, I just kind of like it. Like, yeah. It's just very clean, very tight. Especially love the inclusion of several new Capenna lands, notably the lands that when they enter, you sacrifice them, gain a life, and search for a basic one of the colors of that that group's affiliation. We're only running two of them, the two that can get Plains and Islands. And then we're also running the Skybridge Towers, which is the dual tap lands, but you can also pay four, sacrifice them to draw a card. So love seeing those inclusions here.
Like I mentioned at the top, super cool, very straightforward combo deck. You can look at any of the individual cards in here and see exactly what it's doing for the greater strategy. So that's always good to see, especially for beginners. And I think it really hits what we're trying to do with this deck of the week, which is introduce you to a deck that if you've been around for the submission period, you might not know exists because it's all the way down at the bottom of the database. But this is still a very accessible option from that initial group of decks that made the journey over.
I really like this deck because even though we established it's a combo deck, the combo is fairly easy to understand, right? It doesn't require too many cards. But even though it's straightforward, and if you know how to play Magic, you can pick this up and probably succeed reasonably just because it's playing powerful cards. The skill ceiling on this, I think, is super high as well.
Yes.
Like, the floor to be able to play it is super low, but the skill ceiling is super high. Shout out to Yaleron for making a real banger. I'm hoping to maybe bring this to the next time that we get engaged in a little bit of CPEDH. I'll be the guy who's net decking, but yeah, I love this deck. Speaking of the database, we've got a few new submissions. Trev, what are we working with today?
So since we had our final sort of quarterly submission period, the database has moved to rolling submissions, which still ends up with, you know, a chunk going in at a time because we get so many submissions. And there's been a few very prolific brewers recently who have been really just taking this to town and letting all their ideas flow, which we love. But Matt Edwards and Nate Diggity 7. Looking at both of you guys. The four decks that we're introducing to the database, or were introduced last week, we have a Sir Conrad Rats deck coming from Clay, Azra Oddsmaker deck coming from Medwards, Brunor Battlehammer, which didn't quite make it in our last period, but Nate Diggity has really been working and worked with the committee an awful lot to bring it up to the standard that we would be kind of looking for from a Voltron deck. So we got Brunor in. And a new Zada Hedron Grinder deck coming from Papa Popper and Stein. So some prolific names in this time around as well. And some very, very potent builds from commanders that most of them, I think three of the four, already kind of were known to be incredibly powerful. So it was very cool for this like super high powered round of decks.
I think something also that's very interesting to note here is three red decks and two black decks and zero blue decks.
Yeah. It really points to kind of the aggressive nature. And given the ones mentioned, you know, Sir Conrad, Azra especially, Brunor, and then Zada, these are aggro decks. More often than not, they're coming down swinging. This was definitely a departure from where we've seen the more dirtle and combo. And the database is really moving away from where in that first submission period, we saw a wall of denial deck submitted just because it could dirtle for long enough.
Well, Chev, we have four decks to get to. I'll let you pick which one you want to start with.
Let's go down our notes. Sir Conrad is coming out first, coming from Clay, and is a rat colony deck. So there's Relentless Rats, and then Rat Colony is the version from Dominaria 2018. 2-mana, 2/1 rat, gets +1/+0 for each other rat you control, and then a deck can have any number of cards named Rat Colony. This is notably 1-mana less than Relentless Rats. Relentless Rats scales toughness, though, as well. Probably the most interesting thing, and what should immediately brought up, is we now have two rat decks in the database. One coming behind Sir Conrad the Grim, and then the other was the one that was on there already, and that is Gary, Grey Merchant of Asphodel. The rat colony that we're getting from Sir Conrad is a little quicker to come down because of that reduced mana cost. Sir Conrad is a key part of the deck, as opposed to Gary, where the previous rat deck is expecting you to win with Relentless Rats, and Gary is kind of there as a good finisher, since Relentless Rats each have two pips of black. So it's a bit of a different plan, and that can really go into which deck you feel like you want to play. Julian, what do you think about our new Rat King?
Sir Conrad on his own is powerful enough to make a deck, right? The fact that he's just a big body, but also anytime anything touches the graveyard, we're paying in everybody, right? So things can get dangerous real quick. I kind of like to compare this deck to, it's a weird combo of like a proper aggro deck, right? But it's got sort of like a combo finish where after we've just been attacking recklessly with our rats, we can just use Sir Conrad and a discard outlet or a sacrifice outlet, and all of a sudden everyone is taking 10 damage. Kind of almost similar to how Gary works as well, in that obviously they're doing combat stuff and then Gary comes down and drains for usually like a billion damage.
That sounds about right.
It's a nice little 1-2 sort of punch, like this inevitability that eventually, you know, as long as Sir Conrad gets down, I'm just going to be able to dome you guys for a ton.
Yes.
Which is potent, for sure. I definitely like the inclusion of the Rat Colony. We're playing 30 Rat Colony, which is a lot. I definitely like them over the Relentless Rats. Obviously, they both can get huge. Clavin says it in his primer that we want rats turned sideways at all times. The fact that they're going to be huge, like, either people are going to have to take a bunch of damage, or they're going to have to trade for them. And they're going to be big enough that arguably we could trade for pretty much anything in the format. So it doesn't matter that they only have one toughness. The fact that we can get them out a factor higher than whatever the math is, I don't know, than normal Relentless Rats, I think is pretty sick. Especially since them dying just fuels anything that we're doing with Sir Conrad.
So. Exactly. Some of probably my favorite includes in this deck. I'll go over a couple of my favorite. And I've been working on for our Monday game night with the PDH pod guys. I was looking at Phyresis for Garna, and I feel like I was just rereading Sir Conrad. It might not be competitive, but since Sir Conrad's the one dealing the damage, it's not each person losing a life, Phyresis might be pretty fun in here. Of course, it is a one-shot if Sir Conrad dies. But anyway, onto the cards I really enjoy about this deck. Really, I love what Sir Conrad can do to win out of nowhere with, yes, we're trying to turn our rats sideways, and yes, we're putting our opponents in those sticky situations where I can take the rat, or I'm going to block the rat, lose my best creature, and still take a damage from Sir Conrad. But what I really like is, even though the main game plan isn't to abuse the graveyard, we still have enough ways to abuse the graveyard should all of our rats end up there. Self Bajuka Bog is always something that's kind of laughed about, but in Sir Conrad decks is an incredibly powerful win off a land drop kind of effect.
Oh yeah.
Things like Tortured Existence, where you're paying one to choose and discard a creature and return a creature from your graveyard to your hand, and you've got just kind of an endless loop for as much black mana as you got. Death Denied and Grave Purge. Yes, they're good at getting you some rats back should they end up in the graveyard, but they're also just, you know, just remove all my rats. I don't need to draw another card for the rest of the game. You're all dead. And so having these instant speed ways to kind of really clean out the graveyard, but also murder everyone involved is a super cool, not necessarily plan B, but a plan 2A.
The funniest of all these has to be Felden's Cane. For one mana, you get an artifact that you can tap, exile Felden's Cane and reshuffle your graveyard into your library.
Yeah.
That's a... I'm just imagine Sir Conrad, right? This is like, have you seen those like a flavor judge little comics on Twitter and stuff?
Yeah.
It's like this plus Sir Conrad. He comes over, he's got like his cane, and he just bonks you on the head with it. There's a ton of ways that we can trigger Sir Conrad. I mean, Sir Conrad has a lot of words on him, but it's basically just anytime anything enters or leaves the graveyard. Namely, we have a few different sacrifice outlets. We're playing, you know, Carrion Feeder, Viscera Seer, Blood Throne, Vampire. These are all fairly common in the format, especially if you're trying to do sacrifice things. But Sir Conrad says anytime it would go to the graveyard from anywhere. So if we have like something like Putrid Imp or Cabal Initiate that just have a discard a card, no other cost, activate this ability. You know, if we have seven rats in hand and you're at seven life, well, you can bet your butt that I'm going to put my whole hand in the graveyard and kill you.
There is the definite need for Sir Conrad for a lot of these effects, and starting at five mana, it means it's going to be a little while before he gets out, and you want to make sure when he comes down, you're in a good enough place to take advantage of him. But having 30 rat colonies is a good way to make sure that you're continuously putting pressure and that Sir Conrad might not be the most immediate concern that your opponents have when they're staring down the barrel of, you know, how crazy these rats get when even there's like four or five on the battlefield.
And if we don't need all those rats, we're playing... basically, this whole deck is just 30 rats, a few removal spells, a few of those ways to just insta-kill out of nowhere, and then we're playing basically every deadly dispute effect known to man, which I love.
Yeah.
We're like, all right, we attacked with the rat, they didn't block it, so we've dealt the damage, and now we're just going to cash that in for probably two more rats.
Yep.
And I love that way of churning through our deck. We're also just playing all the classic black draw two, lose two, which was something I was wondering about. I wonder if, because we're attacking so recklessly with our rats and trying to churn through our deck, if playing like Read the Bones and Foreboding Brute, Fruit and Sign and Blood and stuff, if that life loss adds up and is actually non-negligible.
Yeah, because we usually want to blockers either, so... It's a little bit dangerous, but I think that's just really leaning into the aggro aspect of this deck.
There's not as much self-mill in this as you might think there would be for a Sir Conrad deck.
Mm-hmm.
We're specifically a rats deck, so we want rats in the hand and on the battlefield. We don't want to mill them. And also, as opposed to something like a Gary deck that's playing a bit more control-y, our margins, I think, are a lot thinner in terms of how many black removal spells and stuff we can play. But I think that is interesting because if you were going to play Sir Conrad in maybe just PDH as opposed to CPDH or especially something like EDH, you would want to just mill things out. But you'd also have a lot more recursion, all that sort of stuff. So
the one new card from New Capenna that I was doing the math in my head of how much damage this could actually deal, Dig Up the Body, black and two. Casualty one, of course, is double the spell if you sacrifice a creature. And then the ability is mill two cards, then return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand. In a beautiful, perfect world, of course, that might not be what you always get, but you're playing this, you're sacking a card to Sir Conrad, that deals a damage, then you're duplicating it, you're milling four cards, returning two creatures from your graveyard to your hand. You're probably returning the card that you sacrificed to Dig Up the Body, and another one, milling four. There could be rats in there. That's a lot for an instant card.
We got one for casualty, two for creatures returning from graveyard, right. And then let's say you happen to have four creatures on top of your deck. Is that a full seven damage? This deck can pop off. I have not had the experience to play against it, and frankly, I don't know if I want to.
Other than that, I think as someone who also has a deck with a creature that you can have any number of, the rest of the deck has to be relatively lean. We've got the rats, we've got Sir Conrad, we've got a few cards that are kind of cute with those abilities. But the rest of them are just the best of for all of these different effects, you know. And so whereas Pure Sight Marrow is easy because it's a straightforward kind of combo deck, one of these is very easy because, you know, there's only like 50 different cards in the deck, cutting the total commander cost in half. Land base, 34 swamps and a Bajuka Bog. You know, it's as simple as it gets.
You'll love to see it. I'm going to make a comment about a mana base that's very similar to that later on. Everything comes in untapped. Everything generates exactly the color we need. And that's it.
That was one of the conversations that we had with Clay in the database process was, you know, there's a lot of good utility lands out there, especially in mono black now. But it's really, since this deck is so dedicated to the aggro, even something like Witch's Cottage, right, that comes in untapped if you control three or more swamps, was deemed as too high risk that it would come in tapped, at least for Clay's vision of this deck. All right, let's move on and give another one of these decks some love.
Well, this one I'm super excited about, and I think you are too. This is the Azra Oddsmaker deck. Azra Oddsmaker, super cool card. One black, red, 3/3 Azra Warrior. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may discard a card. If you do, choose a creature. When that creature deals combat damage to a player this turn, you draw two. Super cool card from Battle Bond, a set we both love. But notably, when we were first trying to get into the format, a deck that you were playing around with was an Azra Oddsmaker deck.
Yeah, so I actually, when we first started playing with it, I was looking around for an Azra list, and I came across Alcadron's. Alcadron's version is a little bit more focused on combat tricks, with the idea being, you know, are you going to let it connect? If you try to block it, then we give it a combat trick to kind of overrun whatever you have. I found that strategy, at least in the matchup of decks we had, to be good, but I wanted a little bit more. And also, I've always really wanted to make a Madness deck. So it was kind of funny seeing this Azra Oddsmaker deck from... Medwards, which really only has, I think it's 13 cards the same outside of lands from that original Alcadron list. It leans a lot heavier on the Madness synergies. It leans a lot more like the Azra Oddsmaker PDC deck in terms of just really trying to be aggressive and using Azra with the combination of Madness to just become doubly effective in making big threats that go unanswered. So leaning off of the, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't, in favor of cheap, effective threats and utilizing madness to the best of our ability with things like Dark Withering, I believe, or Call to the Netherworld, which madness zero, return target creature card from graveyard to your hand. So you can just get rid of that, get some value off an attack, bring something back. So much cool stuff here.
Yeah, this deck leans a lot more into the we're just getting value off literally everything we do, whether that's paying costs to play cards, right? Which I think is definitely the way you want to go in something like this. Even though it is so aggressive, the madness resource loop is remarkable. It is.
In PDH, PDC, it is one of the best engines that exists for getting excessive value. You also see in this deck callback to the shadow creatures. I think Tempest is when they originally showed up. We got a few of them since, but like Douthi Slayer, Douthi Horror, can't block, but also can't be blocked unless another creature has shadow. So you can just get in there, hit him with Azra, and then be drawing two cards per turn. You'll probably end up just as much through your deck with Azra as any other blue deck. Of course, this does put a lot of focus on your commander. There are a few other madness, quote unquote, outlets in this deck. You've got things like Hell Mongrel, which is just a discard a card, gets +1/+1 until end of turn, or Network Terminal, to still be able to get value off of those madness cards. But with something like this, you really want Azra on the battlefield as much as possible, because that is what's really going to make this deck tick.
Network Terminal in this is, I saw that card, it came out in Neon Dynasty, and I was like, we were talking about the 3-mana mana rock, like, with incidental ability. That's personally one of my favorites and one that I want to see more play. And I think it works a lot in this, especially with the madness. And we have things like First Sphere Gargantua that has Unearth. Yes. And it's like, yeah, I would love to just discard that, because now I'm going to haste a 5-4 at you. Another huge, important resource package that this deck loves to employ, and something that's been causing a lot of waves, potentially for the worse in 60 card popper, is the inclusion of Monarchy and also the initiative cards.
Yeah, I mean, we saw how powerful initiative was in PDC, even with I think one of those first games that we played where you were playing the white black.
Yes, the Knight of the Black Rose.
For most of that game, there was a single creature on the field, and it was when it's blocked, deal 5 damage to target opponent. So that plus initiative, I can't imagine what it is in 60 card, where you don't have nearly as many resources and you are always the target of your opponent.
Well, also you can play 4 of them.
Yes.
That would be the Vicious Battle Rager for 3 and a black. We have a Dwarf Barbarian. It's only a 1/5, but when it enters, you take the initiative, and whenever it becomes blocked by a creature, that creature's controller loses 5 life. This card is nuts. Mm-hmm. And once again, obviously being the Monarch and the fact that we are, even though I mentioned we're more value-oriented, we're more mid-rangey than the Damned If You Do, Damned If You Don't version of Azra Oddsmaker, we are still attacking every turn.
Yes.
Right? We are planning to connect with a creature every turn. So we plan to always be the Monarch. Obviously, that's a huge resource explosion for us. But even the initiative, being able to trigger that every turn, there are some really good rooms in the Undercity. Being able to just, especially once again, if we're grinding, being able to go through the Undercity once or twice in a game, that's a lot of value. It's crazy.
Yep.
Another initiative card that I also think is super cool, and this is a Stirring Bard. 3 and a red for a Dragon Bard. It's got Defender. It's an 0/4. When it enters, you take initiative, and you can also tap it to give target creature menace and haste until end of turn. Potent when you need a creature to connect.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I gotta say, I am interested, though, at least from, I believe it's in the PDC list, from IEIOROMA. Which was the Azra Oddsmaker.
How do you pronounce that?
Deck I played against you, Julian. But in this one, I'm failing to see. It's something like Something Agony. 4 mana instant, destroy target creature from Modern Horizons 2, but it has madness for black and red. It essentially becomes a Terminate. I am interested that it's not in here. I'm seeing other things like Wrecking Ball, which might be a little bit more meta dependent if you've got a deck that's running the Mystic Sanctuary loop. You want to be able to take care of lands. What's the card from Zendikar Rising? Something Wildfires?
Cleansing Wildfire?
Yeah, Cleansing Wildfire. I feel like it's only a matter of time before that becomes useful in the competitive meta.
This is definitely more relevant in something like PDC, but like, at what point do we start playing cheap land destruction just to keep people like off colors or off a certain mana value? If we know that their commander costs 4 mana, Do we destroy their third land just to set them back a turn? Or, you know, or maybe their commander costs 8 mana because they've cast it a few times. And it's like, well, you're at 7 lands. Let me put you back to 6 just because I don't want you to be able to go into it next turn. That's something that I've always kind of wondered because, I mean, if you look back at things like Vintage and Legacy, obviously Strip Mine, Wasteland, these are staples. So being able to kind of like choke the mana on someone, it's much less effective in a 4-player game.
Right.
But in PDC, even in CPDH, where there are some lands that have such a warping effect on the game, maybe it is worth it to have that that versatility.
Anything else about Azra?
No. Other than I really like the deck. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Azra is super fun. I'm very glad to finally have it on the database. This is one of the few commanders in the database that both of us have seen enough times to really not want to underestimate. This is going to be target number one. Just the resources that are generated. I'm not going to say they're equal to Tatiova, because Tatiova in green and blue can really just bring card after card, life after life, but you will be drawing probably a similar number of cards to the Tatiova deck with Azra.
If you are listening to this and you actively play CPDH, you need to be ready to kill Azra Oddsmaker on site.
Yes.
That's how much card advantage it gets. I have played with it maybe only like once, but I've played against it, usually with Chev piloting it, I want to say like 5 or 6 times. And yeah, every time I'm just like, what the f-? He just keeps drawing cards and he just always has everything. I'm like, God, you just have so many resources. It just keeps going. Anyway, though, they say that the best way to remove things is actually player removal. And this next deck does that pretty well. We're talking Brunor Battlehammer, the big daddy dwarf himself. Say that 5 times fast. Two, a red and a white for a legendary creature, dwarf warrior, 5/3. Each creature you control gets +2/+0 for each equipment attached to it. I always forget it's each creature. I always just think it's him. You may pay 0 rather than pay the equip cost of the first equip ability you activate each turn.
Brunor was one of the decks that we originally failed in the last submission period of the database. Nate Diggity didn't really want to take no for an answer. Really wanted to workshop the deck with us, which is one of the benefits of the rolling submission period, is we can kind of really keep curtailing a deck and see, is it possible to draw something new and unique out of this commander? And with the meta, especially in tryhards moving more towards aggro, we thought that the meta can support at the competitive level a Voltron deck. But it did take a lot of changes, and Nate Diggity was working with us kind of the entire time, trying to make sure that the deck preserved what made it special to its creator, but also put it in a place where it can more go toe-to-toe with these other decks that are going to be coming from a lot more places at once. I have played against Brunor Battlehammer decks at the competitive level a few times now, and I've got to be honest, I have not seen them perform exceptionally, but a lot of them had the previous mindset of Brunor is going to be our number one threat. We're going to have a ton of cards that protect him, and we'll just keep loading him up with equipment, exactly what you'd expect of Voltron, but just like you expect with Voltron, where this commander costs 4 to come in and has no natural evasion, it gets removed very quickly and takes a while before it comes back. So the largest change that we really pushed for this deck to be competitive is adding a ton more creatures. And, you know, we're still only at 14, but that's probably twice what it originally had, you know, running Brunor. And then, of course, the classics like Kazul's Toll Collector and Champion of the Flame. But even those are going to be the immediate target of removal, because Azra generates a lot of cards and that is a threat. But staring down the barrel of something that's a native 5/3 that gets +2/+0 from 10, 15 equipments in this deck.
More than exactly as many as we have creatures.
Yeah, you're going to find the removal hitting Brunor much quicker than other things. Adding a lot more creatures, especially taking advantage of what we've seen from white in really just the last few months. ETB draw card like Search Party Captain, Spirited Companion, Priest of Ancient Lore, Inspiring Overseer, all of these things that, you know, will still benefit from being equipped. Aspiring Overseer has flying too, which is amazing. You can have these creatures, they generate resource, and they give you something else to attach the equipment to should Brunor, and when Brunor goes down. And that's really the biggest change in this deck, and it makes it a little more of a not go wide, obviously. I could not in good faith say go wide with only 14 creatures, but makes it more like whack-a-mole than just whale hunting.
Yeah, I mean, I think another cool thing is we have a bunch of equipment, like I said, 15 equipments in here. And, you know, assuming things are going reasonably well for us, you know, maybe we have a Brunor suited up with two things. We have a Inspiring Overseer suited up with something. We have a Champion of the Flame suited up with something. We can now start spreading out our damage. One of the biggest issues with Voltron decks is that they have to focus on one person and get that person dead. And then by that time, everyone else wakes up and is like, oh, right, we'll just kill you. And then the rest of us will continue our game, right?
Exactly.
But if I have three creatures that are all suited up and all very deadly, I can put point one at each opponent and just keep the pressure on like that to the whole table. So I definitely like this strategy of going slightly less tall and slightly more wide.
Yes. It's something that is, until we get more protection equipment at common, which I'm going to be honest, I'm not hoping that we do. Yeah. Voltron is going to be in a somewhat precarious position, and it's really going to be, how do you play the game politically and effectively to have a presence on the board that is more than just a lightning rod? We've got all the usual evasion pieces. We've got all the big things like, you know, Golemskin Gauntlets, Great Axe. I think one of my favorites is not necessarily the equipment, but Stave Off. It was mentioned in the deck at the beginning as well, and has been used not only for protection for Brunor and giving it protection from whatever color, but a lot of people have been using Stave Off also as a combo protection piece. You know, putting it on a target creature, right? It's not a target creature you control. Hypothetically, someone's Pure Sight Marrow to give them protection from blue, so Banishing Knack can't target them or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that's going to be huge for decks like this going forward, is playing spells that can function, that are not necessarily modal spells, but function like that.
Yes.
Some similar things that I think are interesting inclusions for this, shifting slightly less from the pure Voltron strategy, is the inclusion of a Breath Weapon and Fiery Cannonade, two of like the only quote-unquote wraths in the format.
Right.
One, all of our things are going to be beefed up, so theoretically they're not going to get hit by that. So we can clear the way, especially if people are playing like token decks, we can clear the way so that we can get in. But also, if we are just taking our time getting set up, playing equipment out, obviously Brunor costs four. If someone's getting off to a quick start, we can almost play a control roll, hit them with the Breath Weapon, and play damage control, at least until we can get our stuff out.
Yeah. Other than that, very straightforward build. You're going to play your creatures that get abilities for adding equipment, and then you're going to be playing a ton of equipment. We've got a few instants that give double strike, which are going to end the game should they come down with Brunor and something else, because of course commander damage is at 16. Brunor is already a negative 5, so just needs a plus 3 between the 15 different equipment in here to deal damage.
All you need is plus one from an equipment, because Brunor is going to give himself plus two
His own ability. You need one equipment and the double strike, hence why Brunor is removed so liberally.
Yes.
So keep an eye out for that. But then, yeah, the rest of it, card's good. Whisper Silk Cloak and the Walmart version that gives like ward one.
Oh, leather armor.
Yeah, leather armor.
That's a card I haven't seen around. I don't know if I would include that, but it is what it is. I will say the thing about the equipment, we do have so much of it, but we are covering a lot of bases. There's things that give different buffs, haste, flying, trample.
Build your own keyword soup.
Anything else on Brunor?
No, I think that's it. Just the final message being, you know, thanks to Nate Diggity for working with the database committee on this, because I know it can be hard to kind of relinquish some of that initial vision to get something that's in a little bit more of a competitive place. As a lesson for everyone out there, you have a favorite commander, you put in the time, you put in the games, you think it is competitive, or maybe it's almost there. Don't be afraid to kind of submit it, and then we'll work with you to get it to that 100% from 90.
Yeah, 100%. Shout out to the committee. We have both worked with them, and they've been phenomenal in all accounts. So yeah, definitely don't hesitate to reach out to them. All right, our last deck, Zada, Hedron Grinder. Hopefully people know what this card does by now, but I'll read it anyway. Three in a red, Goblin Ally, Legendary Creature, 3/3. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell that targets only Zada, copy that spell for each other creature you control. That spell could target. Each copy targets a different one of those creatures. So we're just mass copying, mass targeting our whole field. Mono red deck. What the heck's going on here, Jeff?
So this is actually the second Zada deck we have in the database. Honestly, it'll probably replace the existing Zada deck. The original Zada deck is from pre-submission, doesn't have a primer or any other information, and they share 65 cards. Mm. Both decks are focusing on generating as many goblins as possible, things like Beetleback Chief, Emrakul's Hatcher, or anything that creates small tokens that provide targets for Zada's ability once they get targeted with the instants and sorceries. The other big thing to mention from the existing Zada list, this one is coming to us from Papa Popper and Stein. It features 9 less lands than the existing, and more creatures, and a lower CMC. Absolutely crazy. We're also having a great reason to run the freaking kobolds in here. I swear, like, from the database, I have seen more kobolds and these original crimson kobolds and crookshank kobolds than I had in my history of Magic, because there's this, and then there's the black red turbo, I believe, Keskit Dargo that plays everything for just Keskit filter that costs 0 mana. So there we have the kobolds as well, and in here we have them because they cost 0 mana put down, and then we can target them with Zada. So you're going to be playing all of your creatures that come in pretty small, either generate 1/1s or have effects like Prowess. Monastery Swift Spear is probably one of the biggest pickups in this deck in a long time. And then we have every single instant and sorcery that targets an individual creature. And we've even got some of the storm ones like Galvanic Relay. Renegade Tactics, one of the classics, you know, pay 1 red, target creature can't block this turn. Sure, we're attacking, but it draws a card. That's the other way that Zada really gets crazy, is get a board of creatures, copy a spell that draws a card. Don't be surprised if you're drawing 5 or 6 cards a turn. It gets stupid. I would not recommend this deck to someone who's just stepping into either Magic or the format as a whole, because it gets a little bit, you're messing with a lot of numbers in your head. But for people who've been playing for a little while, this can be a very satisfying deck to play.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a very potent CEDH or near CEDH Zada list. Obviously, you get to play with a lot more cards there, but yeah, it gets wild pretty quick. Just a few like stats for this. We mentioned Brunor is going less tall and just slightly wider. This deck goes both wide and tall. We've got 14 creatures that make tokens, 22 creatures overall in the deck. 14 of them will make us tokens. Unfortunately, only 8 cantrips. But like you said, if you're drawing 4 or 5 off a single cantrip, the fact that you might see 2 or 3 during a game is going to be plenty.
Right.
And I tried to count the amount of like spells that either buff or give double strike or trample, and I lost count at 20. So there's plenty. We might have just, you know, a few 1/1 goblin tokens in Zada, but like that really represents like 30 damage right there, which is pretty wild, especially when a lot of things, like you said, like Monastery Swift Spear, have prowess or prowess adjacent things like Kiln Fiend.
Yeah. Looking at this list kind of makes my head hurt in all the best ways. You've also got things like Battle Hymn and Brightstone Ritual, so there's a chance you'll just have enough mana to play out your entire hand in a single turn. It's just totally nuts.
A few choice picks that I wanted to highlight. Dark Dweller Oracle. We discussed this when we got the common reprint in, was it Double Masters? When we talked with the fellows over at the PDH pod.
Yes.
The Dark Dweller Oracle reprint. Yeah, yep, that's sick for this deck. Obviously, we're generating a bunch of tokens, and if one of them gets blocked or we just need to dig deeper, Dark Dweller is going to be huge. Volatile Claws. I mentioned Brunor. Things like Fiery Cannonade, things like Breath Weapon are prolific in the format now because they're kind of like the only sweepers we can get. Well, Volatile Claws,
until end of turn, creatures you control get +2/+0 and gain all creature types.
Yeah, for an instant 3 mana. Obviously, this just buffs all your dudes. Doesn't target, so it doesn't individually resolve, but buffs all your dudes, but also giving them all creature types. Now they are pirates and dragons, yes. So they don't get hit by these other things.
I gotta be honest. I was like, are we going to have to cut this section because he forgot it gives +2/+0 and that it wouldn't protect from cannonade? And I was completely forgetting the fact it gains all creature types.
Yes. Yeah. The last one I want to talk about is, this is a card that I don't think I've ever seen before. Soulbright Flamekin.
Soulbright Flamekin is a 2-mana 2/1 with the ability to target creature gains trample until end of turn. If this is the third time this ability has resolved this turn, you may add 8 red to your mana pool.
Okay, so the reason I want to talk about this is obviously we have a bunch of ways to pump things, but this can give various creatures that we control trample in case they don't already have trample from some of our pump spells. But also, if this is the third time this ability is resolved, which we could easily make that happen, like you said, we have things like Brightstone Ritual as necessary, or we could just have 6 mana. You add 8 red. Technically, this ramps you, yeah. Right? So now all of a sudden, we can use that 8 red to cast spells and stuff. Also, not relevant in this deck because we're playing that Sir Conrad land base of 24 mountain and then just the 3 red cycling lands. but I was going to say, technically, this launders your mana. So right. Yeah. If you needed red mana, you could use this. Something to consider for maybe other decks, but certainly potent in this deck as well. I just wanted to bring that up because it was like, all these weird little niche cases on one card that I'd never seen. I was like, oh, interesting.
Deck good. Expect great and terrible things from it.
We'll say deck good, but if you're playing against this deck absolutely gets demolished by like a single Oubliette on Zada.
Yeah, it is very dependent on Zada. All of these creatures, 90% of them are bad. You've got some that will still be able to get you somewhere, but let's just say you really, really want Zada to be around. Kiln Feed can be good. We are running, you know, the 40 instants and sorceries. So cards with prowess or cards that deal damage when you play an instant or sorcery could still get you there. But it is very dependent, and the cards picked are very dependent on Zada persisting.
Yeah, unfortunately in Mono Red, you just don't have any way to deal with, like, even if you, like, frogified Zada, I don't even think we have a way to, like, deal damage to it to kill it. So I guess unless you, like, sack it with Dark Dweller Oracle. Something to note playing with or against, you really got to be careful. Once again, the 1%, Chev.
Julian, are you forgetting Goblin Churgian? Churgian? Because Zada is a goblin, Goblin Churgian, you can sack a goblin to regenerate target creatures. You got one way to get rid of Zada, but yeah, you're done if it's an Oubliette. Then you got to worry about player removal.
I was wondering what ways we have to, like, quote unquote protect Zada here, because we don't have any of, like, the target creature gains hexproof in Mono Red.
No.
So I guess maybe Churugian is, like, the best we can get. What is that art? Oh my god!
We've got Pyroblast, helps us against some things. Maybe we'd even want a Red Elemental Blast, which we have as well. Yeah, the options are very limited, and you're kind of hoping that with Zada, you've got enough of a board presence when Zada comes down. I'm honestly thinking, like, you're not playing Zada until your board state is big enough that you play Zada and then, like, one or two instants and sorceries that just buff your entire board and let them do the dirty work, because I think Zada cannot spend any time on the board.
I think you're right. I think it's just, we just go fast enough that we don't worry about these things.
Make a giant board, play something like Battle Hymn, use four of that mana for Zada, and then the rest of it to cast all the instants and sorceries that you've just been stocking in your hand.
All right, I'm sorry. I got to talk about one more card. It's literally called Kick in the Door. It's a single red for a sorcery. Put a 1-1 counter. This is in red. What are we putting 1-1 counters on? Put a 1-1 counter on target creature. That creature gains haste until end of turn and can't be blocked by walls, Academy Wall, and you venture into the dungeon. Are you kidding me?
And you could venture through an entire dungeon. If you have seven creatures, you can do that, like, Journey of the Mad Mage. Isn't that, like, draw seven and play stuff?
That one's, like, the craziest one. There's all sorts of... The end thing is, like, put a bunch of cards from your hand onto the battlefield for free, draw, like, a million cards, whatever. Do whatever you want. Yeah, this is crazy.
Venture seven times? I don't know. Do whatever you want.
anyway, though, sick deck for sure. All four decks that we've talked about have been excellent. All five. Fucking Pyrsight Miro, too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Stein, you called us out after the last episode. You wanted the upgraded Zada to be covered. Here you are. Deck good, and according to you, it's Pauper Aggro Budget Combo Competitive Mono Red Primer Storm Turbo. Which I think this is the first time I've ever seen someone use tags, and I love it.
What is the price on this? This is $60. Wow, not bad.
And most of that comes from Zada. Well, we've got a foil Zada in the command zone. That's coming in at $7. And then I think Pyroblast, Crimson Wisps is one of the red cantrips. I know it well from Blanca. That's $3. You could make a budget Zada deck and shave off $20-$30, but for competitive, this is honestly one of the more expensive decks out there. One of the kobolds is from Legends, and that's another reason it's $5.
There's a kobold that's $4. There's a kobold that's $2.50. Thought Vessel is $6. Kobolds from Legend is also $5. Yeah, this is still very cheap, though, for a potent deck.
Deck good.
Deck good. Format good. We are good.
Heck yeah. This has been House of Commons Episode 2. Thanks so much for coming back. Next time we get a bunch of decks from the database, we will show those off as well. Next up will probably be our Warhammer review, because we got some sick downprints from that. And then after that, Unfinity, which is going to be Julian's favorite episode. So thanks for tuning in.
Completely off topic, probably cut this, but when was that? Was that back in like 2009?
Yeah, I think it was after the 2008. That was Occupy Wall Street.
The recession?
Something else, 1%. Might have been something more violent compared to the 1%. But I mean, The parallels are uncanny with how powerful the 1% of a PDH deck is compared to the 99. The power gap has never been greater, Julian.
That's true. They really are. what's the Bernie meme?
I'm
that's
once
just
again
like
asking for the, your, oh, oh, whatever. Are you thinking of the rent is too damn high?
No, not the rent is due to empire, but the Bernie, he has a meme where it's like the wealthy only make up 5% of society, but they control 50% of the wealth or something. I remember there was one back from Battle of Zendikar that was like, the Eldrazi only make up 2% of Zendikar's population, but they control 50% of the mana. And I was like, what the? Anyway. This podcast is not about that.